What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and today is a very special episode. For those watching and probably listening, you hear a little sound or a change in the sound, and it's definitely a certain scene that you haven't seen before here in the cellar rather than the home office where I typically record the show. We opted this year, before we get into our August bottling run, to bring you into the cave here and show you what actually happens when we go through a blending session as we're finalizing a wine. This is something that we've talked about on the show. This is something that we've tried to kind of explain verbally to the best of our ability, but I feel like it was time to kind of bring you actually into the cellar and show you what we do and kind of how we go about this whole thing that we have in front of us here. Before we get into it, as usual, just a couple of quick announcements. Number one, thank you for subscribing, for listening, for downloading. Please continue to do so and share the show with your friends. Number two, as always, if you can leave a quick rating or review wherever you're consuming the show, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever the case may be, that'd be hugely helpful in letting it get kind of further out into the airwaves for people to find. Be sure to follow us on all of our social networks. It's at MTGA Wines. We're basically on everything except the TikTok. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube specifically is where we're the most active. You can also check us out on the Book of Face and the social network formerly known as Twitter. Again, that's at MTGA Wines. All right, that is the only orders of business that I have going on. Let's dive into what we've got going on in front of us here. So today we're going to dive into a wine of ours that we call the Repechage Red Wine. It's our red blend. It's a combination of different barrels and different varieties that we put together every year. So to my left down this hallway, we have all of our barrels from the 2022 vintage that we're going to be bottling up in about a month. And this is typically what I do, kind of the order of operations before we actually dive into a bottling run, is I've done a couple of preliminary blends leading up into this. In fact, I have my little black notebook sitting right here that I talk about all the time on the show with all of my notes. The last time I did the preliminary blends was actually on May 23rd. We went through these barrels and kind of started tweaking and figuring out exactly where we wanted these final blends to end up. That includes our Merlot, single barrel Merlot, which barrel is going to be selected for that, Cab Franc, the Repechage, which we're going to be finalizing today, and our Cabernet Sauvignon, as well as the diverse of red wine that we produce. So a whole bunch of things were on the docket for this bottling run. And this is arguably the most complex because it's not just one variety, like our Merlot. Even our Cabernet sometimes can be 100% Cabernet. We don't necessarily use Merlot as a blender unless it absolutely needs it. Same thing goes for the Cabernet Franc, for example. This one typically is heavy on the Merlot side of things. Cabernet Sauvignon usually makes up the balance, but we do have some extra Cab Franc this year. So we're going to play with that and see if that's something that we can't incorporate into this wine. So based on the preliminary blend that we had back in May, we ended up with a wine that was 42% Merlot, 40% Cabernet Sauvignon, and 18% Cabernet Franc. And that made up that kind of final blend. But I want to come back and I want to double check my work to make sure that everything that we're doing here makes sense and that it's something that I'm actually going to be happy with once it goes into the bottling line. Now, these glasses right here, if you're watching or listening, I have some just water glasses on my right-hand side. These are to represent the barrels that we pulled from. So I've got a piece of blue tape in front of those that tells me exactly what barrel it's from. Typically, we'll actually put these samples into a wine glass and taste them individually. We've already done that, so I kind of skipped that part. So that's already been taken care of. But I've pulled these samples that way I can use one of my handy-dandy graduated cylinders or pipettes to pull a sample from them and blend them accurately to make sure that we're getting the right amount from each barrel that would be representative in that blend. So that's what we got going over here. We've got plenty of graduated cylinders to help measure all that out, plenty of extra glassware, dump buckets, the whole nine, handy dandy blue tape and Sharpie so I can label my glasses appropriately, a little bit of water, extra coffee, all kinds of things to make sure that I can get through a blending session efficiently. So these six water glasses that have wine in them represent those individual barrels. And what we're going to be doing over the course of this blending session is pulling from these in probably different amounts, sometimes equal amounts, and just seeing how it plays with this final blend. That's really the goal here. But before we even start blending, this is something that I do every single time before we dive into a blending session, is we have to taste the wine from the previous vintage, sometimes even the previous two vintages. Now, this 2021 version of the Repechage, this is what's currently available. This was bottled up in August of last year and has been available since last fall. This blend ended up being 57% Merlot and 43% Cabernet Sauvignon. So it'll be a little bit different, being that we have some Cabernet Franc to play with, but maybe the Franc that we are utilizing doesn't work today. We'll see what happens. But the reason that we taste this first and foremost is because we want to make sure we're building consistency. If you're tasting and blending in a vacuum, there's a halfway decent chance that you make something that's really, really delicious, but it's not necessarily congruent or in line with what you've done previously. So the first thing I taste after having a cup of coffee is the prior vintage to make sure that it is, that I have an idea of kind of the benchmark that we're working off of, you know? It's something that's very important, I think, in a wine program, is you want to make sure that you are sticking to what you're known for, kind of stylistically, and continuing the story. Very typically, and this is kind of, some of you maybe heard me describe vintages this way, is that a new vintage of a wine is like a different chapter in the same book, right? It's going to be a little bit different. It's going to continue the story. It's not going to be identical. Because if you're reading a book and it's just the same chapter over and over and over again, it gets pretty boring pretty fast. You want the next chapter to be a little bit different, but still continue the same story, right? So this is, let's say, chapter 21, right? And we're writing chapter 22 today. It needs to continue this story. It needs to be in the same vein, but it needs to have its own personality and its own characteristics to make sure that it is something kind of unique. So this is the control, is what we call it. And that is to make sure that we're kind of building off of this wine and making sure that the new wine that we're creating is in line with it. Maybe not identical, but if you were to taste the two side by side, you'd be like, okay, it makes sense, right? So let's give her a smell, give her a taste, and kind of see where we're at. Now, very typically with this wine, it varies year to year, but there's usually 30 to 50% new oak on this. And that's typically what I smell right out of the gate. You get a little bit of those like baking spices. You get a little bit of like the dark cherry and kind of plum stuff going on. Some red fruit, some licorice going on in there. It's got a little bit of something for everybody. But very typical with red blends is kind of how it is. Because you're dealing with so many variables, you know, there's a lot of room to build complexity and different flavors and things within your wine. It's why they're really fun to make and really fun to drink, is because there's a lot going on and they can still be very approachable and very easygoing, right? That's why I think a lot of us love a good red blend from time to time. So here we go. And that's on the palate, you start to, like, all those aromas that I just talked about, they kind of carry over. You get a little bit more of the chocolatiness in the wine. It's a little bit more earthiness to it. You, of course, feel the acidity is really, really great. It's very forward. This, because it's Merlot heavy, the fruit kind of dominates the palate. It kind of jumps right out at you. But the finish hangs around. It kind of just sticks around. This wine in particular, we also kind of consider the alcohol content in a lot of our wines. This one is 15. It's one of the higher vintages that we've had. The 2022s are probably going to be in that same realm because of this heat spike that we had. So it's somewhat apples to apples putting these together. They might be a little higher octane than we typically make, but that's something that is that we need to consider when we're talking about the, you know, vintage character and what we're bottling. You can remove alcohol, oddly enough, through reverse osmosis, but it's a pretty heavy filtering process and you're gonna do other things to the wine that might affect it. So it's something I prefer not to do, as long as the wine tastes balanced and it's yummy, I'm not too worried about what the alcohol content is. I just want to make sure it feels, tastes, and smells good. And if that's the case, then I think we're pretty much all set and ready to go. But being that we have a couple of higher octane vintages in front of us, that's something that we need to take into consideration, right? That is kind of in the back of our mind as well. Okay, so now that we know what the 2021 tastes like, typically what I do, first and foremost, is I recreate the wheel a little bit. And that's what we've done in our preliminary blending sessions that I have written down here in my notebook. And the first one, I don't know if you can see this on the video actually, but there's one in particular that there's like an X through. That was the one we recreated to kind of, in essence, mirror this. And it just didn't work. It's like, okay, the percentages we used last year are not gonna work for this year. And sometimes that happens. It's just the way the vintage rolls sometimes. So it was like, first things first, that's not gonna work. So we're gonna have to try and find something different and something interesting that's still gonna be in like the same vein. And that's where the challenge comes in. So we're gonna start with what I thought was kind of the front runner for the blend here. We're gonna build this, and it's gonna be pretty quick and easy. We just gotta measure some things out, dump it into a glass and see what it is. This blend had the working name of Alternate Number 3 because it was the third blend that we put together because I just wasn't quite happy with the first two. The first one just didn't work. Just, it kind of sucked, to be completely honest. And it was just the sum of the parts kind of took away from what that final blend was gonna be. So we started to iterate. The second blend was pretty good. It was almost one third, all the, you know, Cab Franc and Cabernet and Merlot, sorry. So it was almost like just one barrel of each in essence. We're only gonna make 75 cases of it if that was the case. And it was good, it was pretty good. But I wanted to take it a step further and be like, okay, let's see if we can't, you know, give it a little bit more Cab Sauv, a little bit more Merlot, and let the Cab Franc kind of be a, you know, just a nice little wild card in there, and let's see how that plays. So let's grab our little handy dandy pipette. Let's start blending. So this little pipette, this measures out to 25 milliliters. And this lovely graduated cylinder is 100. So basically what we're gonna be doing is slowly adding to this cylinder until it reaches 100. Now, if we're doing, you know, 42% Merlot, you can say, okay, well, that's 42 milliliters of Merlot, then it's gonna be 40 of Cabernet, and then 18 of Cabernet Franc. So I can measure it out and just you add up to 100, and there's your 100%, and you're good to go. Math is easy sometimes. It does get harder the more samples that you try, the more blends that you try. The math can get a little convoluted at times, which is why we have notebooks. It's why we label our glasses. We got everything like dialed in. And it's like, okay, we need to make sure that we got everything kind of where we want to be. So for all intents and purposes for this blend, we used the two barrels of Merlot for this blend. So it's gonna be, you know, if it's 42% Merlot, basically you gotta divide that by two because it's two barrels here, right? So we need 21 milliliters from each of these barrels here to dive into making this blend. And I love having these little pipettes around because you can really, really dial in the details here. There we go. And it helps to have this flat surface like this table. I'm actually gonna put my hat on backwards because you probably can't see my face as I'm doing this because I'm like hunched over trying to do things. But this is like, okay, there's your 21. Boop. Right into there. All right, let's do the next one. Here we go. Very delicately, make sure that you're not going over. This is something that some people won't tell you about blending, is that all of these barrels, when it comes to bottling time, theoretically, they're all roughly the same volume. However, each and every barrel is slightly bigger, maybe slightly smaller than the one next to it. So there is a margin of error that we deal with here. So what we try and do to mitigate that, at least what I try and do, and this might sound a little jacked up, and this might not be how many winemakers look at it, but if it's not perfect, that's okay, because you want it to be in the ballpark. Because the trick of the trade that I've learned anyway is that when you get to that bottling run, the day of, or realistically the day before, you taste your wines, you make sure they're where you want them to be, and if for some reason it's a little quirky, you try and touch it up as best you can with what you have in tank. Because knowing full well the Merlot's gonna be down there, the Cab's gonna be down there, the Franc, the Blend's gonna be down there, if I need a little bit more of something, I can get that added to the lot kind of on the fly. So there is kind of a last minute like, oh shit, we need to just tweak, just polish this a little bit more. You do have that opportunity. It's not necessarily, you know, something you want to have to deal with, but on occasion, every once in a while, you find like, you know what, this was really good when we did the blending session, but it just, it's lacking a little something right now as we're getting ready to bottle it. So you kind of make those last minute tweaks, quite literally last minute tweaks, up until the day before bottling. It's rare, but it does happen because it is somewhat of an imperfect science because the volumes of these barrels are all slightly different. So this is, you want it to be as close as you can, you know, within a milliliter or so of what you're really trying to do, but you also have to account for the fact that, hey, that Burgundy barrel that you have down there is gonna be a little bigger in volume than the Bordeaux barrel that you have. So it's gonna have probably a heavier impact than what you might think. Speaking of the Burgundy barrel, let's put the Cab Franc in. So realistically, we want 18% Cabernet Franc, but because that barrel's a little bigger, it might end up being just a hair more than that. So that's something that when we bring it up to tank and get ready for bottling, that we're gonna have to consider. So when right there, we went a little heavy on that guy. This is why having a little pipette here is just the best thing ever. Just hold your thumb over it and or finger over it. Do a little redo, take a little out. There you go. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. All right, now we need our last 40% of Cabernet Sauvignon. We're at 60 right now, so that's perfect. We're right on the money. So for this initial blend that we did, the one I really liked, there's only two of these three barrels that I utilized. The one on the very end and the one that's kind of right here closest to you guys, if you're watching the video. These two that are kind of stacked up on one another, both of them are neutral barrels, but from different cooperages. One is from Sylvain, one is from Gamba. And I like both of these wines. The Sylvain was kind of the front runner for the blend. And the last one here was some of the new oak that we have to play with. So between like these three lots of Cabernet, I'm probably only going to pick two of them, potentially. We'll see. This is why we do kind of these blends, so that we can check our work. Because what we're gonna do is recreate the same thing, but instead of the Sylvain, we'll use the Gamba and compare these two barrels and what their actual impact on the wine is. All right, so we need 40 milliliters. Of these Cabernets. Oop, that was a little much. So it's two barrels total, so we only need 20. To make the right percentages stick. Otherwise, we have a blend that's 120%, and that just doesn't work, as it turns out. So you take a little out, take a little out, take a little out. Here we go. Let's go ahead and top that up just ever so slightly. There we go. Perfect. There we are. The last 20 milliliters from this barrel. There we go. Perfect. Okay, so we'll just leave that there for now. So this will be alternate number three. This is the one that was the front runner. This was the one that was probably my favorite out of all the blends that we tried. But I do want to compare it with something. Not just the control that we have up here, but with the other barrel of Cabernet that's kind of the alternate number four. So we'll give that a good little swirl, let all those components come together, and we'll put together the next blend. So the next guy is alternate number four, and this is going to be with that Gamba barrel that I was talking about that I wasn't particularly keen on, but let's check our work. Let's give it a good old try. So we'll do alt number four with the Gamba. And it's going to be the same percentages because this was the blend that I liked the best. Now we're coming down to barrel selection. And what might be interesting, and this is something that we've seen happen before, is like maybe both of these are pretty good, but maybe they're just not quite there. So maybe we'll do like half of each of these barrels and combine both of them rather than using one or the other. We might pull half of the volume from each of them and then incorporate both barrels into the final blend. Stuff like that happens every once in a while, which makes it kind of even more complex and more interesting. So this is I can add up to 20 here. Luckily, this is a graduated cylinder that adds up to 20 as well. And then I gotta use a smaller one for everything else. This is something that I learned very quickly, is that when you're putting together a blend, you always have another thing to kind of measure out in, and then you dump it into the bigger container after the fact. Because if you're just going into this one thing and going, all right, 20, now I got it to 40, now I got to get to whatever. If you overdo it, there's no going back. So this is the way to help control what you're actually doing, is making sure that I'm pulling the correct amount using this little guy, and then we're using a blending vessel such as this to kind of bring it all together and make sure it adds up correctly. Otherwise, you have to start all over again, and that's too much like hard work. You want to make this simple, stupid, and not have to overdo it too much. Cool, sitting at about 20. All right, there's our Cabernet for this blend. We're going to need 18% or 18 milliliters of Cabernet Franc coming up next. We'll keep that proportion the same. So that's just a little below that. There we go. Here we are. This is very typically, it's probably a little quiet as I'm doing these samples here. This is when I have some music going. It's a lot of punk rock and alternative going on just to liven the mood a little bit. Keep things a little bit feisty. All right, and then we need 21 of each for 42% Merlot total. There we go. So the reason we're working with just these six barrels, because we have quite a few more sitting here in the cellar, is because these are the ones we've already tasted and we've earmarked for the red blend. And this is kind of the order of operations that I utilize when I'm putting together wines for a bottling run. I mentioned, you know, all the wines are bottling between Cab and Merlot and the red blend and Diversum and all these things. The reason we're using these six here is because these are the ones that didn't make it into the Merlot and didn't make it into the Cab or the Cabernet Franc. These are kind of the outliers. Now, I knew these were the outliers probably a year ago. And at that time, it was really up to me to say, hey, do I want to kind of keep them as the outliers, or do I want to try to incorporate them into these other wines? And part of you is like, yeah, we could make a little bit more Merlot, maybe a little bit more Cab Franc. But even at that time, I was like, yeah, they're just a little bit edgy for what we want those wines to be. They don't really add anything to them necessarily in a positive way. It's kind of a net neutral, you know, addition, which means, yeah, you can make more wine, but is it actually making it better? And for me, if you're adding something to a wine and it's not really adding anything, in fact, it probably detracts from it a little bit, probably best just to let it lie. So these six barrels are the ones that are kind of the outliers, which is why we call this the repechage. It's that second chance race in a tournament or competition, and it gives those competitors a chance to kind of get back into the action. That's what we're doing for these barrels here. It's like, hey, you didn't make the cut for the other wines we make. Let's try and repurpose you and find a place for you to succeed. And that's where the name came from, actually. All right, 21% more Merlot. We're right on the money over here. This is the nice thing about blending, especially in this format, is that you're just trying to add it to 100. It's really straightforward, and as long as you can count to 100, you're gonna be just fine. That's not the hard part. The hard part is making the judgment call of what is going to be the difference, and are these wines actually, unique and better, or is it just different? That's something that can be kind of this rabbit hole you go down when you're blending a wine, is that every once in a while, as you're creating new alternates like we just did here, it might not necessarily be better, it just might be different. And sometimes different is yummy, but that's why you have the control over here. You try that prior vintage again, you're like, okay, is different actually good, or is different just different? Because that might not necessarily be a good or bad thing. But it might push you in a direction that you can't really come back from. So that's something that we do, or something that I try and keep in mind as well as we're creating these blends here, is making sure that, we're not just iterating for the sake of iterating, that what we're doing is actually trying to make the wine better and more unique, more complex, and not just doing something for the sake of doing something. It's easy just to keep throwing different iterations at the wall. I mean, we can play with these percentages forever and never come up with a solution if we don't want to. And this is where the judgment of a winemaker really comes into play, is that at a certain point, you just have to say, you know what? This wine's awesome. I like where it's at. Let's run with it. And that's, you just have to. Otherwise, it's death by a thousand cuts. It's very much analysis or paralysis by analysis. You know what I mean? It can really send you down into the weeds and frankly, put you in a place where you just can't come back from. That sounds a little dramatic, but it's kind of the truth. All right, let's taste the control one more time. It's opened up a little bit more since it's been in the glass. So it's the fruit characteristics are coming out a little bit more. The oak is more toasty instead of rich. At this stage, and the fruit characteristics are a lot brighter. It's definitely more of like that red, like cherry kind of characteristic, chocolate covered strawberry, moving that direction. It really kind of opens up into those bright red fruits, as opposed to kind of the darker, more brooding characteristics that it initially had, which is something I love about this red blend, is that kind of year in and year out, as soon as you open it, it's a little rough and like a little more intense and feisty. And like I said, kind of dark and brooding. And then you give it that 5-10 minutes in the glass and you're like, oh, that's still there. There's still an undercurrent of it, but you start to notice all these other flavors and characteristics now that it's had a little bit of airtime. Okay, moment of truth. So on my right-hand side, your left-hand side, if you're watching the video here, we have alternate number 3. This was the winner of the preliminary blend. And then we have alternate number 4, where we switched out one of the barrels. So to illustrate that just for you all, is that both of these blends are the exact same percentages. You have 42% Merlot, 40% Cabernet Sauvignon, and 18% Cabernet Franc in each of these glasses. The difference comes with the Cabernet Sauvignon, is that we pulled from the Sylvan barrel for this guy, kind of a tried and true barrel that we've used for Cabernet Merlot and Cabernet Franc. It's a staple within our program. And then in this other glass, what is alternate number 4, the last one we put together, this is the Gamba G7 barrel. This is a barrel that we use exclusively for our single barrel Merlot. And then after it's been used once, we put it into our Cabernet Sauvignon program. So it's a great wine that comes from that barrel. It typically goes into our Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon, and that's what we're trying to decide here, is that do we want to repurpose that for the blend, or should we keep it in our Napa Cab program? That's really what we're playing with. If this ends up being better, we'll have to kind of go back and play with the Napa Cab blend a little bit, but we'll save that for another day. Okay, I'm excited because this is when, man, the proof is in the pudding. Like all of my notes and everything, you reread it, and I did all that before we kind of went on and started recording here, kind of checked all my work and was like, okay, like this is, let's see what happens. Let's get after it. All right, alternate number three. This was the fan favorite back in May. Let's see how she's doing today. The nose is very similar to the Control, the prior vintage. A little darker, a little richer. You get a little bit more of like that fig and plum rather than that cherry kind of characteristic going on. But that makes sense because there's a very hot heat spike that hit. We got a little bit more ripe than we normally do. The licorice is definitely popping right now. It's like not quite, but it's like proper licorice, not like fake red vines. It's like that actually good licorice. You know what I mean? But it is more red licorice, not dark like anise, you know, black licorice. It certainly has like a little bit of a, like a cola, kind of like root beer kind of characteristic, which is not a complete departure from where our red blend kind of sits from time to time. That's a characteristic that many people have picked out previously. It's very similar to the 2021. Very, very similar to the 2021. I think this is why I liked it so much. It just was like, this is it. Like, this is right where we want it to be. We love where this is at. It's just yummy. Great acid, great tannin. This is like your backyard barbecue red wine during the summer. This is like, just line it up to knock it down. That's awesome. Still very, very happy with where that is. We got to put another star next to that big boy. It's doing beautifully. Two more stars. It's a 4-star wine right there. We're trying to get it to a 5-star. Something like that. I don't know. It's totally arbitrary ranking. But that's what I do, is I put stars next to the stuff I really like. And the more stars it has, like, the better it is. So that's, everyone's got their own system. Mine, like anyone else's, is a little crazy. But hey, it's only crazy if it doesn't work, right? Okay. So this will be interesting because this is a different barrel. The nose is a little different, actually. Definitely a little bit brighter on the nose. This one also has, the first blend we put together has a little bit more vanilla and oak on the nose. The other one, similar, but it's a little bit more like, it's got a little bit of that like cigar box thing going on, like a little cedary, you know what I mean? Certain, like the wood kind of is a little bit more prominent, where it's more like the sweet oak characteristics in this, like your mocha vanilla, this is a little bit woodier. Just a slight distinction to be made, but like solid, but just like we were kind of talking about, like just different. You know what I mean? Now, on the palate, that's got a little bit more of like the tart cherry rather than like dark cherry kind of characteristics. It's still very smooth. The acid and the tannin are definitely elevated. Like this has got a little bit more structure. I'd say this is a little bit more akin to maybe the first vintage or two that we made. It's a little rougher around the edges. The polish isn't quite there on it. It's good, but I don't know if it's a front runner. Because I like it. I'm just not in love with it, you know? It's a little bit more old world, you know? If we are trying to emulate, you know, kind of a right bank wine from Bordeaux with some California flair, this is the style. That's definitely where it goes. Like, you can really feel the acidity in this wine. It's intense. This one, the one, alternate number three, the first one we tried, definitely a little bit rounder, a little bit easier going, a little bit more depth to it. This is a little bit, maybe a little bit too forward, maybe a little bit too rough around the edges, I think. Let's taste the control again. See, and it's a little tough because when they're a year older, it's just so much more complex. It's so much more interesting because it just has that extra time and bottle to kind of settle down, where these two are still just monsters. They're just rough around the edges because they're very young wines. They've only been, I mean, they're not even 2 years old yet. Very young red wines. Now, if we're trying to continue with what 2021 had to offer, we're probably looking at alternate number three now. This first blend we put together, very similar to this, has that depth, has that richness to it. The characteristics line up a little bit more, where it's like dark cherry and plum versus, you know, lighter, kind of brighter characteristics. Although this kind of, like on the nose, this still had some of that like fig and, but like fresh fig. So it's still not like dark, it's not like jammy, right? See, this is where even I get in my own head, I'm like, which one do I actually like? And this is where you go back and forth a couple of times. All right, we're gonna set those aside for a minute, because there was another alternate that I really enjoyed that isn't represented here. And that was alternate number two. This was kind of the wild card. I wasn't completely in love with this one. I liked it. It did only pull from three barrels. It was simplified. We were only going to make a little bit of Merlot in that case. Or sorry, a little bit of our red blend in that case, which was fine. And I liked it. It was very complex. The oak influence was much heavier because we used a little bit more new oak in this wine compared to some of the once used and twice used barrels that we have here among the six that are incorporated, or the five that are incorporated. So let's go ahead and give this a little shot here. And then I've got one more wild card that we're going to put together after this. Actually, let's do that one first. Let's do that one first, because that's going to make a little bit more sense. This will be alternate number five. And this also ties into these first two blends that we created a little bit. Because instead of using five out of the six samples we have in front of us, we're actually going to use all six. We're just going to adjust the proportions a little bit. So the percentages are actually going to be the exact same as these first two, but we're going to work, kind of polish the Cabernet side of things. Because if I like both of these, can I split the difference between these two and create an even more complex, more interesting wine? So this is alternate number five. So half Gamba plus half Sauvignon. Perfect. So this is where we start really, really getting into the minute details of blending. Because this blend is still going to be 40% Cabernet Sauvignon, but we're going to basically split it up between, you know, 20, you know, half of that's going to come from this one down here on the end. The other half is going to be split between these two rather than using one or the other. So this is where you start to get a little bit more granular in terms of your detail and what's actually going to go into your final blend when it's all said and done. Let's go ahead and slide these down ever so slightly so we've got them in order. And let's start building this thing out. This, I'm excited to see where this turns out, because this is going to be something that is, that we didn't try in May. This is completely new and different. I have no kind of prior opinion on this. But because I like these other two iterations, this might be a great way to bridge the gap between the both of them and make an even better one. Sometimes this works. Sometimes this is like the ace up your sleeve and you can say, hey, we just made a much more complex, a much more interesting wine. And sometimes it completely falls flat. You would think that, hey, if both of these are really good, and if we split the difference here, could it be even better? That's the thought process. There are times when that just doesn't work. And you're like, ooh, that just doesn't jive the way it should. And that's the artistry of blending. You have to take the time to do this. Number one, you can't just phone this in. You have to sit down at a table, try your samples, understand what you have in barrel to be able to put your best foot forward. If you do not do this kind of stuff, you're just kind of phoning it in saying, hey, we got five or six barrels. Let's just use all five or six, is what it is. Your wine's just not going to be as good. Plain and simple. You want to try and maximize what you have in the cellar, for sure. You don't want to waste any wine necessarily, but you also can't just assume that, hey, these are the barrels we want to use. Let's just use them and not really have a thought as to why, right? You need to make sure that there's a purpose behind every single barrel. And this is where I get to be on my soapbox about being a small producer versus a big producer. Because when I have, count them, 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18 barrels down this hallway, I can taste through all 18 in less than an hour and make my notes and my adjustments and figure out where we want those wines to be. When you have 10,000 barrels in your cellar, it's a different story, right? You can't taste through all those necessarily. It's gonna have to be a random sample. And you're still, and not to take too much away from those big guys, they'll still sit down, they'll do their blending sessions. They'll try and dial in wines as best they can. But when you're pulling these large samples, let's say you have, 400 barrels that are just one cooperage, just one barrel, and you're like, hey, we're just gonna pull all 400, blend them all together, get a random sample of it, make sure that it's, accurate, relatively, but we're not gonna taste every single individual barrel. You just can't. And many people don't. And that's where your wines, in my opinion, start tasting just good, and you never really get to great. There's a fine line there, but it's a tough one to cross. All right, so now we're gonna do 10 milliliters, just 10 little milliliters from each of these glasses to finalize this blend here. We're almost there. Here we go. This is gonna be really interesting. I'm curious how this is gonna shake down. There we go. I'm also making a glorious mess back here. The amount of little droplets of wine I've spilled. There we go. Lovely. Okay. Looking good. All right. Here we go. All right, alternate number 4. Blending the Gamba and the Sylvan cooperages to see if we can use both and not just one or the other. Makes my job a little bit harder when it comes to getting these wines up to tank and actually ready for bottling, but hey, nothing good ever came easy. That's the way it is, right? Okay, so let's go ahead. I should have just left the Corvin in this bottle. Let's go ahead and pour a little bit more of the control just so we can have it as a reference. There we go. That's why I love having this device. It's completely useless at home because when we open a bottle of wine at home, we intend on finishing it. But for our purposes here today, it's a lifesaver. Okay. Let's give this control a shot. And that fresh, since we are corvining it, that definitely brightens up the wine a little bit more. It's back to its kind of dark brooding nature, where previously it had some time to open it up. It had been in the glass a little while. So something to keep in mind. It smells good. There we go. Okay, nice. Okay, so let's try alternate number 5. So still 42% Merlot, 18% Cabernet Franc, And then we have 40% Cabernet Sauvignon, but instead of using two of these barrels, we're using all three, just decreasing the proportions of these two here so that we can basically pull half of each and still add up to the same percentage. Does that make sense? So it's like 10, 10, 20, right? Still adds up to 40%, but you're sourcing from three different spots rather than just two. So that brings out, interestingly enough, a little bit more herbal quality, a little bit more, it leans into that anise, into that licorice. It's a little bit more savory in character. I think that's maybe, that might be just a little too different. It smells great, but it's just, it doesn't play in the ballpark that we're used to playing in. I like it. It's a little more floral. Like you get some lavender, you get some like lavender and like blossomy kind of characteristics in there. The one we did prior has a little bit of that. Pro tip, actually, if you feel like your nose is getting a little tired, you smell the back of your hand and kind of hit the reset button a little bit. But it still leans a little bit more towards that like vanilla, the oak is, and cedar and lighter oak kind of characteristics that we mentioned previously. Yeah, this is definitely a little bit more along the lines of like your, it's got way more floral characteristics than alternate number four. Let's go back to the favorite and just give it a smell, see where it's at. This has been the front runner the whole time. See, that almost has kind of both, actually. You have that richness, it still leans a little bit more towards the mocha and the chocolate. Those definitely dominate. There's still some floral in there. It's very, very subtle, though. And so we have three very distinct blends that we've put together here, because you have something that is truly a little bit more dark and brooding. It's certainly a very much in line with what you would expect from the prior vintage. So those two are kind of like the line them up, knock them down. They're in the same ballpark. In fact, you know, they're playing on the same team in that ballpark. The second one we put together, the other alternate, was it leans a little lighter. It's more red fruit driven. It's more cedar and vanilla rather than chocolate and mocha when it comes to the barrel characteristics. This last one here leans into more floral characteristics, actually, which I really, really love. We haven't tasted it just yet, so. But I don't know if that's really never been a calling card of our red blend. So even though I really like this, it doesn't really play into what this blend has been historically. And because of that, it might just be on the out. This race ended before it even got started with this wine. See, what's interesting, this almost feels like a donut wine, because it has the tannin and the acid and like the brightness of the second one we put together. And the finish like pops, but it's a little bit more bitter. And there's nothing really in the middle, right? The mid palate, it kind of goes through this valley. Like it's big and it's nice and then it dies off and then it kind of comes back up. It's a donut wine. Now in the middle, there's just nothing there for it. Like it's good, it smells great, but it doesn't leave this like nice long lingering. You also feel this blend in particular, you feel the alcohol a little bit more. Like it's a little hot. You know, it's not like taking a shot of vodka hot, but it's like, okay, like this one's got a little octane to it. You probably this one will get you where you're going, you know what I mean? I think that one just doesn't work. I'm not a fan. It's fine. It's good. It just does not do it for me. it takes kind of the edginess of this wine and just kind of exacerbates it a little bit. The floral characteristics are beautiful. They're very delicate and nice, but that's not what this red blend is about. That's never been what this red blend is about. And for that reason, you've been voted off the island. Appreciate what you're doing. that one's just not gonna work. I like where that one's at, but I'm glad we tried it, but that's just not gonna do it. That's not gonna do it for us. All right, voted off the island. Goodbye. Let's try these two again real quick just to see how they're holding tight now that they've had a little more air time. See, still really bright. The tannin really pops on this other guy. There's one tricky thing when it comes to blending it, when it comes to tannin, is that very typically as you feel that roughness and that chalkiness on your gums and your tongue and cheeks, it kind of exacerbates itself. That when you keep tasting tannic wines, it gets like more and more and more and more. So even though you started with something like relatively soft, that tannin starts to become very, very dominant very, very quickly because it just keeps kind of amping up as you keep tasting. So it's nice to take a little breather, which is why we'll put together another blend here in a second, kind of reset a little bit so that the tannin doesn't become overwhelming, because both of these were a lot smoother earlier, but because we're tasting more and more structured wines, especially with that last blend we put together, it was immense. It was so chewy. These two are kind of leaning into that now as well, because that tannin just kind of compounds as you keep tasting. I still really like the nose on this the best, because it's not that like deep, rich chocolate. It's definitely that mocha kind of lighter kind of thing going on, which I really enjoy. Like that, you know, that coffee plus milk kind of, you know, kind of character. Like it's got this creaminess to it. Yeah, that's still the front runner. It might be confirmation bias at this point, but man, that I'm very happy with where that's getting another star. That's officially a 5-star blend. We have put that thing up against a lot of different options. It has come out on top every single time. Huge fan. All right, there's one more we have to try though. There's one more ringer that's waiting to take this thing down from the top rope. So. This would mean for this particular wine, we'd actually be making less wine because this only took 3 barrels in essence, equal parts, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, in essence, equal parts, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, and Cabernet Sauvignon, just 1/3, 1/3, 1/3. We did go a little heavier on the Merlot. We were, 34% Merlot. And then 33% the other two. That way it actually adds up to 100. You know, so the Merlot was a little bit more, but not a lot. But this was dubbed alternate number 2. This is from the previous blending session that we put together. And this was after doing that first blend, kind of recreating what we had from this year, and it just not working. I'm like, all right, well, let's go to the drawing board. This was the first place we went. Was let's kind of get all these things into equal parts. Let's see how they play and go from there. So let's start with that. So we're gonna need, so for this in particular, we didn't use this Merlot that's right here. This is in a neutral barrel. It's actually a barrel from 2012. We've been using this barrel a long time. It's a great container, it makes great wine, but it's a very much, it's kind of a, It's kind of like Play-Doh. I can kind of mold that wine into whatever I need it to be, which means it can be a great addition for the Merlot. For me, it doesn't quite have the backbone that it needs to be a part of the red blend. So what we used for this iteration was this Gamba barrel that's sitting right here. So we're gonna do 34% of that particular barrel. Are.
go.
It is actually kind of nice. You get really good at measuring stuff out with a pipette as the years go on. You do this a few thousand times, you get pretty good at it. It's pretty easy to be like, oh, yep, there's the little, shoot, what's the name of it? It's not the meniscus, is it? No, that's in your knee. Oh shoot, it's where, because when you're measuring in a graduated cylinder, I can't believe I'm forgetting what this is, but it's the liquid in a cylinder like this kind of like dips a little bit, and you always measure from the bottom of the dip. At least that's what I learned in high school chemistry, and if that's not correct anymore, you know, that's, you know, times change, I guess. Should probably pick up a chemistry book and check that out at some point. All right, a little more. Put in some Cab Franc into this guy. The one thing I was worried about when I put together this blend is because it's gonna be so heavy on Cab Franc compared to previous vintage, we've never had a blend of ours that's been 30% Cabernet Franc. Never in the history of our winemaking have we ever done anything like that. And this was one of those blends where I'm like, it's different and it's yummy and I like it, but it might be too much of a departure. It's not gonna be close enough to this to kind of continue that story that we talked about. Like, this is not a new chapter. This is a completely different book we're talking about. So we'll see if that's the case. All right. And for this, we use this new oak barrel from the cab. Go, that's a little too much. We're gonna have to back that off just ever so slightly. Of course, I said I was really good at measuring this and then I mess one up. Ugh, happens. All right. There we go. Okay, so this was an impressive blend back in May. I'm very curious to see if it actually holds true today. The nose is very different. The nose is very, very different. The Cabernet Franc dominates the nose on this. Cabernet Franc, something I love about it is that it can really help accentuate some savory characteristics. Think of things like your fried sage and like rosemary, like chicken kind of like, you know, aromatics. Like, it has this great layer that it can add to a wine. But again, it is just a little too different, I think. It's delicious, but yeah, it's a complete departure from where the control group is. The 2021 is nothing like that. And keep in mind, this actually does not have any Cabernet Franc in it, so that makes sense. Like, that tracks, right? So, and it's rare that we have Cab Franc to use for this wine. So to have it be one third of this blend, as good as it might be, it's completely different than any of the red blends we've done before. Just plain and simple. And I really like it, but man, that Cab Franc is coming in hard and heavy. It's also way more structured. Oh man, that's chewy. That's really chewy. Oh my goodness. All right. That is, man, if you wanted a wine to like punch you upside the taste buds, that's the wine. It is definitely not the blend we're going to use, but man, it's something else. This is a heavyweight. This is a heavyweight wine right here. It's almost all tannin. It's unfortunately a little thin. It was really good in May, but it's just not anymore. There's just not enough there to it. And it's also pretty hot. This one, you feel the alcohol quite a bit as well, where these other two are much more subtle, much more subtle. Yeah, that's just not it. Nope, that's just not it. Man. All right, so we figured out what doesn't work. That is a huge part of blending, is figuring out just what's not gonna work, right? Because there are gonna be certain wines and you're like, man, that tasted really good a month ago or even 2 months ago, like some of these. And you get to this point a month before bottling, like, nah, it's just not there. So let's do this one more time. All right, they have been put through the ringer. They have been tried and tested over the course of the episode here. We're gonna give the control one more go, and then we're gonna taste these two one last time just to confirm where we're at. The moment of truth. These two have been kind of back and forth, different but equally tasty. The five-star wine, the five-star champion here has been just lining them up to knock them down, but we'll see if it actually holds true. Because the control has still got that nice, it's just yummy. It's got that yummy vibe to it. Okay. All right, we got it all set up. We're ready to rock and roll. All right, the heavyweight bout, this is it. For all the marbles, as they say, we're gonna start with the champion. The champion gets first dibs this time around. The nose, again, very, very similar, leans right into the prior vintage and what you would expect from that prior vintage. And almost identical. For all intents and purposes, these two wines are like a diesel engine. Take care of the maintenance and it's just gonna go. It's gonna take care of you. They are very much aligned in style, in structure, in complexity, which is so interesting given that we have a little bit of Cabernet Franc in the new vintage and there's none in the prior vintage. It's pretty crazy how similar they are. But I think 2022, because of that heat spike, you definitely had wines that were a little bit more ripe, a little bit more fruit driven, a little bit more alcohol driven. The Cabernet Franc, like we noticed in the final blend we put together, it's so structured, it's so intense, it helps temper that a little bit. It kind of brings that back and says, hey, you gotta reel that in a little bit. So that Cab Franc is doing a lot of heavy lifting. It's 18%. It's a good chunk of the wine, and it is probably the glue that's gonna hold this blend together. It is in an amazing spot. And that Sylvain barrel is just, it's rock star, it's killer. It's doing what it should be. All right, the moment of truth. The Challenger, alternate number 4, with the Gamba barrel. Let's see if it can take it down from the top rope. Let's see what happens here. The nose is still very cedary, very, you know, bright cherry kind of characteristics. It doesn't quite have there's good depth, but it's just different. It's much more bright and poppy rather than a little bit more darker. Does that even make sense? This is what happens after you start tasting this much wine. The words start to not come together as well. The math gets a little harder, but we're gonna persevere. We're gonna get through it here. I like it, but it's just very much akin to the first vintage of this wine that we made in 2018, 17, 18, one of those 2 years. So this is what's interesting, is that realistically, between these two wines, they're equally good. They're equally representative and could be a great next chapter in the story of this wine. They both could be. They're both right there. But the original favorite, the 5-star wine of the day, alternate number 3, the official title of this wine, specifically because of the aromatics, how it smells and jumps out of the glass. It really jives with what has historically been this wine. This other one we put together is definitely a little bit more old school. It's a little rough around the edges. I like it. I love it. I want some more of it. But for all intents and purposes, for what this wine has been and where it has gone over the last few years of its production, this alternate number 3, 42% Merlot, 40% Cabernet Sauvignon, 18% Cab Franc. We're using the Sylvan barrel here, this Gamba barrel that's down here. We're going to omit that from this blend. That's the real deal. That's it. That's the winner. Clear. I'd give it 6 stars, but I think 5's the limit. So 5-star, that's where we're going to hang our hat. Thank you all so much for tuning into this blending session. I hope this sheds some light into what winemaking is all about, some of the judgment calls we have to make, what it takes to sit down here at a tasting table and dial in exactly what we want our wine to be. Because even though we have a benchmark to work off of, there's going to be a lot of trial and error in working with what we have from a particular vintage, the different barrels, how it's aged. And sometimes you're going to find some things that are outliers that are simply not going to work. But you have to try them to be sure. This is where kind of that science kicks in a little bit in winemaking, where you have to kind of take your hypothesis and run with it and test it and test it and test it until you find something that works or until you find something that doesn't. Because even if it doesn't work, like a couple of these blends today didn't, they just weren't the vibe, they were not going to work for our program, they still provide you the opportunity to learn something about what you're doing. And even when you have a couple of front runners that are equally good, that are equally solid, that would be a great representation of the wines that have come before it, you still have to make that judgment call because you can't make both. So you have to say realistically which one is going to be the one that is going to carry this program forward and into the future. So I hope you've enjoyed this journey with me. I hope that you were able to enjoy a glass of wine while you had to sit here and watch me or listen to me taste and iterate and do all this. I'm sure my teeth are incredibly purple at this point as well. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I'm excited to share this episode with you. Hopefully you get to catch the video of this and kind of see all of this in action and how we organized it. You can check it out on YouTube. That's at NTGA Wines on YouTube. This will be under the Wind Up podcast section. Of course, if you're listening to the episode, you can go to YouTube and check it out. But I hope this provided a lot of insight into what we do when we're getting ready for a bottle run and trying to make sure that the wines we're producing are going to be of the utmost quality and a great representation of what you all expect when you purchase a bottle of wine from a specific winery. So thank you all so much. Follow us on all of our socials at MTGA Wines. That's on YouTube, Instagram, the Book of Face, the social network formerly known as Twitter. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you consume your podcast. And if you can write a little rating or review, that'd be awesome. You can also head to our website, that's mtgawines.com, to find out a little bit more about this wine specifically. Sign up for our newsletter, all kinds of other things. And yeah, I think that's it. Thank you all. We will see you next week for another episode of the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.